And this is our number
two. It's time for the fastest 15 minutes in the news. This is Dory's Fastest 15.
It's a world of news in a tidy little 15-minute package just for you. Welcome to our Fastest 15. So last night I'm flipping the dial, and I see bowling was on.
Mm-hmm.
You ever watch bowling on television?
Yes, when I've had absolutely nothing else to do.
I kind of enjoy it. But it's been, when I was a kid, they used to always have bowling on ABC on Saturday afternoon.
There's something a little bit depressing about that for me. I don't know why. I mean, but I would watch it and I'd just be like, okay, why am I watching this on a Saturday?
Yeah, but that was my life when I was a kid. It was Chris Schenkel and Nelson Burton Jr. did the play-by-play in the color.
Nice.
When I was a kid. And now, because I haven't watched bowling for a while, but I flip it on last night. It was some big tournament in suburban Detroit. And now some guys don't even put their fingers in the holes.
Seriously?
Yeah. They'll put a couple fingers, but not the thumb. And they use a two-handed delivery.
No way.
They go back with both hands.
Do they end up lofting the ball?
No, but the spin they put on it is just crazy. And but it's the announcers. I fell in love with the announcers last night.
Oh, nice.
This was on the CBS Sports Network. So I had to go back and record the middle of the night version so I could pull this audio. Because I failed to capture it when I first saw it last night.
The length do you go for our,
it's unbelievable.
For our listeners.
Yeah, so I recorded it in the middle of the night, got up. I sent myself an email at like 1 a.m. reminding me to get the bowling audio so I could play it. So here's one of the guys. He threw just a perfect strike and with so much power. And he's one of these two-handed delivery guys.
And it has that amazing, like you said, that the arc or the curve on the lane. It starts off to the very, right or left, and then it manages just to hit just right.
The other thing they were talking about incessantly was what type of ball. And like one guy uses a urethane and the other guy uses something else. And they had the hook. Ability of each of the balls that this guy has in his arsenal.
Is that even bowling anymore?
I don't know what it was, but all I know is I fell in love with the announcers, and I wish I knew this guy's name. But after this one guy threw this perfect strike, and the pins just seemed to explode when the ball hit it, here's the color guy.
That was as close to leaving the 6-8 as you can leave, but the pins cooperated with him. They're the last two pins of the fall, the 6-8.
I mean, this ball goes through the pins about as hard as me going through the front door of a Walmart on Black Friday. I mean, this is just dirty.
Okay, that was cute.
Okay, and then a few minutes later, a guy throws the ball, and the 4-pin kicked out the 7-pin and gave him a strike. And here's what the 4-pin did to the 7-pin.
Down front. That's a really good sign for Jesper Stenson, and I'll tell you why. It looked like he got it a little bit left. The ball actually came back to the pocket, and then the 4 sent the 7-pin into concussion protocol. Watch the action of the 4.
You know that they've got a whole list of these. They just pick what's going to go with number 16, concussion protocol.
It sent the 7-pin into concussion protocol. So I just wanted to grab that audio for you, for your enjoyment today. Okay, next up in the Fastest 15. So how did Ron and Don happen to get this interview with his dad yesterday?
So the dad actually emailed Don.
Okay.
And said that this had happened to him.
And this was the story of, in Shelton, a homeless guy. And once again, this is more proof of how the homelessness problem throughout our state is wreaking havoc far beyond Seattle. So what happened in this Walmart, a 32-year-old California man, so it's another import from out of state, who's living in his car over near Shelton, Joseph Paz Alvarez is the accused here. And what he allegedly did on Friday in this Walmart was he grabbed an 8-year-old girl who was there with her dad, pulled the child to the ground, attempted to take the 8-year-old girl's clothes off.
No, he did. He pulled her pants and underwear
off. He was successful?
Yes.
Okay, because I did not see that in the first print store.
Let's play the cut. He describes it's terrible.
Okay, so he pulls this little girl's clothes off, and then the dad catches this homeless guy in the act in the Walmart, and here is
So they're outside the Walmart. The little girl is walking behind him. He's holding onto the hand of his younger daughter.
In the parking lot.
Right, but he's right behind him. But he's bigger than the dad, and he grabbed the girl bear hug style, ripped her pants and underwear off, got on top of her, and then the dad had to pull him off eventually.
Right, in front of the dad.
Insane.
Unbelievable.
And so the dad emailed Ron and Don, and they got him on yesterday afternoon. And listen to what this parent had to experience and see with his daughter.
I take my kids to the store before they go to school on Fridays for a little treat. It's just a normal thing that we've always done. And we were walking through the store like we always do. And my oldest was behind me, 8-year-old behind me. And all of a sudden I turned around and she was literally right behind me. And I turned around and this guy out of nowhere came up and bear hugged her from the back. And I wasn't sure what to think at that second. And I had my other daughter by the hand and we were sitting there watching, trying to figure out what to do next. And he then put her on the ground, and that's when I started moving, and I went after him to try to push him off, and he was much bigger than I was, he ended up removing my daughter's pants and underpants, and that's when I went into really crazy mode and was able to somehow push him off. He got up. We all got up. I grabbed my kids and held them tight. And he got up and exposed himself in front of us and said something. And I was screaming for help just as soon as I realized something was wrong. And then all of a sudden I had a huge group of people surround him, and I took my daughters to a safe aisle and waited for the police to show up.
And as we said, this is on a Friday morning. He's just stopping on the way to school, and here's what went through Justin's mind.
I, there's been a couple attempted abductions here locally, and so at first that's the first thing that came to my mind is that maybe there's someone behind us, and maybe this is a distraction, because I had my youngest by the hand, and I didn't want to let her go. But at the same time, I'm looking at my oldest, this guy was bigger than me. I mean, there was no way I could have fought him and, took him down. And so it was just terrifying, but I knew I had to try to protect them more than anything.
And the reason he wanted to share his story is just as a reminder to parents.
I want to share my story to tell other parents that even when you think you are as safe as you possibly can be, that anything can happen in an instant. My daughter, she was right behind me, maybe 6 to 8 feet behind me when all of this happened. You think about those things, you hear about those stories, but you never think it's going to happen to you or someone you know, let alone in a small city and let alone in the middle of the day, it's important for me to share this story to tell other parents that, just hold your kids a little tighter.
So the prosecutor has asked for $1 million bail, saying that Joseph Paz Alvarez is an extreme danger to the community. The defense attorney says, well, there was no actual sexual contact or molestation, and he asked for $10,000 bail. And the defense attorney said that Paz Alvarez claimed he was under U.S. government mind control when he committed these crimes. The kid is severely traumatized, as you might imagine. But this is yet another example of this guy, according to the court documents, was living in his car. It's an extension of the homelessness problem and the mental state of so many of the people who are out on the streets right now. And to this, you know, to have this happen to an 8-year-old girl on a Friday morning is just a nightmare.
Well, with her dad right there.
I understand that the guy was much bigger than the dad. And I don't know what I would be capable of strength-wise in a similar situation. I think that I would want to beat that person to death if I was the dad. I would think I would want to kick them in the head and continue until they were gone.
I think, like you mentioned, he was just in shock that it had even happened. So I think in that moment, you're not ready to beat the crap out of them because you're like, you can't even process that it happened.
Yes.
Yeah. And so who knows how soon this guy will be out on the streets. But this is our region right now. And that's over in Shelton. Lives the entire region. We told you yesterday about what happened down in Auburn, also on Friday, where a little girl, 13 years old, she says that she was scared for her life when a guy in a car tried to abduct her. And this guy is an illegal, been deported from this country 2 times, according to the judge. His name's really similar to the Shelton guy. The Shelton guy was Joseph Paz Alvarez, and this guy in Auburn, his name is Victor Paz Fajardo. So both of them have hyphenated names with P-A-Z at the beginning. Victor Paz Fajardo, he'd been deported 2 times from this country, keeps coming in because we have absolutely no border security, came up here and tried to grab this 13-year-old girl who talked to Channel 13, talked to Q13 News about what happened to her.
I really thought, like, I was like I'm going to get kidnapped. So I was hiding, and I seen the sign that it said no trespassing, but I was so scared. I was scared for my life. So I just, like, went behind their car.
And this girl did what you have to teach all of our kids to do. She fought, she pulled away, she screamed, and she was able to give a description of the guy that was so good that the police caught this 43-year-old guy not long thereafter. And as I said, according to the judge, this man has been deported from the United States 2 times, but keeps coming up here because we're a sanctuary city and county. And we attract people who know that they're not going to have their immigration status question even asked by law enforcement. And it's tough to even find out who's an illegal. But it was the judge who said that in court, and the defense attorney confirmed that. So here you have a homeless guy trying to rape an 8-year-old girl in Shelton. You have a twice deported illegal trying to abduct a 13-year-old girl allegedly in Auburn. Both of those are allegedlies, just to be safe legally on those.
And because I'm sure we'll get emails that the Shelton attacker was not an undocumented immigrant, despite their name similarity.
Right. Yeah, no, he was home. We checked with law enforcement this morning, and they confirmed that he was not undocumented, but he is a homeless guy who's living in his car.
And the hyphenated name, Paz, Paz means peace in Spanish.
Oh. Well, that's ironic in these two horrific stories. Next up in the Fastest 15. And then did you hear what's going on up in Mill Creek?
Yes.
Where they have a city manager who hasn't shown up to her job for weeks and weeks and weeks. And she continues to collect a paycheck, and it's making the people up in Mill Creek a little quizzical. Their name is Rebecca Polizotto, because Mill Creek's kind of a small community. And they said, well,
it has grown a lot, by the way. I don't know if you've been there recently.
It has just
really kind of exploded.
I saw the traffic on 164th there.
Anytime it's a gorgeous neighborhood.
Get off the freeway, it's just a nightmare. But you know how much they pay their city manager?
How much?
$175,000 a year. That's $2,000 less than what Jay Inslee makes as governor. Plus,
I want what she has.
Well, plus, she gets a $300 a month car allowance for reasons that escape me. But anyway, Rebecca Polizzotto, she hasn't shown up to her job in weeks and weeks and weeks. But people in the community are saying, oh, time out. We see her, like, at the grocery store. And we see her, you know, just driving around the community. And so they called an emergency meeting on Friday night of the city council. And they said, well, she's out on medical leave right now. And they drafted a statement that he wanted the other city leaders to approve. She hasn't showed up at the office for 6 weeks. And I'm sorry, if you're a public official, I know they're saying, well, if it's a medical leave and maybe it's not evident when she's driving to the grocery store and people are seeing her. If you're a public official, you owe the public some answers. And you shouldn't be able to just hide behind
that. Now, if she is, in fact, using up her sick time, she's got the sick time coming to her. I didn't realize that she was actually, that the reason is that she's sick.
Well, that's
if it's something very personal.
That's the statement they gave on Friday night, but nobody believes it. Everybody thought that it was just kind of a bogus statement that they are concocting because there's so much pressure about somebody not coming to work. And again,
I think the biggest problem, though, is lack of communication. When you don't have transparency, people are going to fill in the blanks, but you don't have details.
Yeah.
And that's what happened.
And at first, they were just given all kinds of no comments when people were asking, but then they met for 5 minutes Friday night and put out a 2-paragraph statement saying they won't comment on any allegations. I'm still trying to figure out how the city manager of Mill Creek makes $175,000 a year. So here's a council member.
City Manager Rebecca Polizzotto has been out on medical leave. There has been no investigation by the auditor's office of any fraud allegation, and the council has not reprimanded Ms. Polizzotto.
But then a former council member there, Kathy Nielsen, she told Channel 4, ComoNews.com, well, she sure doesn't look sick when she's wandering around town.
There's a lot of confusion with that when someone lives within the city and she's being seen, but she's not here at City Hall.
And then there's all this talk that she also is just really mean in how she talks to everybody as city manager.
She yells at people, belittles them, talks about them behind their back.
So then Channel 4 went to her house and said, hey, why don't you just tell people what's going on here?
I'm not making any official comment. I'm leaving that to the council.
You owe 175 grand a year. You owe people to know why you're not showing up to work for 6 weeks. But do you think if it's medical that
well, you know
just
who actually handled that really well? I'm just trying. I'm thinking about this. Our Secretary of State, Kim Wyman, when she became sick, I mean, she put it out there.
Yeah.
Said this is why. This is, you know, I'm not going to be here. And then she, when she was well enough, she came back to office.
Right. Yeah. But she told people and gave answers as a good public official would. 175 grand a year. And then Channel 4 explained the mayor clarified her absence.
Well, during the meeting, council members said that the city manager was out on family medical leave. However, the mayor later clarified that she's using up her sick time.
So nobody knows what's going on. $175,000 a year to be Mill Creek city manager. That's pretty good dough. And that is your Fastest 15.
This has been the Fastest 15 Minutes in the News. Fast Stories, Fastest 15.
Ooh, we're just going to check the news. And then the biggest pimp in America, literally, Dennis Hoff, brothel operator down in Nevada. He's running for political office. He won his primary. And I'm going to find out from him what's the difference between politics and the brothel business. Because I'm guessing there are more similarities than differences. That's next.
I don't know what you heard about me. What if you can't get a dollar out of me? No Cadillac, no perms, you can't see. Then I'm a...
Well, you know how I feel about politics. I think we have a bunch of soulless people in politics. And as I've said, I don't know if politics attracts soulless people or if it turns good people soulless, but I think that they're basically a bunch of people who are willing to sell themselves for money. So wouldn't it be interesting to have a pimp as a member of Congress? Dennis Hoff is an old friend of our radio show. He's the proprietor of several brothels down in Nevada, including the Moonlight Bunny Ranch, and he joins us here on Cairo Radio. Dennis, it's always good to talk to you.
Good morning, good morning. Well, it's a big day, and the rhino hunter got the big prize in Nevada. He got the biggest rhino of them all, and it's been a wild ride. But you're right with your lead-in.
Yeah.
You know, the new book should be, instead of The Art of the Pimp, which Judith Regan did, my next book should be Prostitutes to Politics, Where the Real Whores Are.
You see, that's how I feel about so many members of Congress. So, and you're running for the state legislature in Nevada, right?
Right.
State okay.
legislature, correct.
All right. So you're running as a Republican, and who did you knock off in the primary here?
A guy named James Oscarson, who was the biggest tax hike. He's never seen a tax he didn't want to hike. And that's what this was about. That's what the race was about. You know, Grover Norquist from Americans for Tax Reform came out to support me from Washington. Roger Stone came out and told Perump, this is the Trump of Perump. He's rich. He likes pretty girls. He's a reality TV star. He's an author. He produced TV shows. He is the Trump of Perump, and I think that's what sent me over the edge.
What? Now, would you have to give up the brothels if you become a member of the state legislature there?
No, I won't have to at all. It's just one of my business. You know, I have 25 businesses. The brothels is just a part of it.
Yeah.
And so, no, that's going to be interesting, though, when you get a brothel owner in the legislature.
So, yeah, so what is your platform? What are the key things you want to get done if you get into politics?
Well, the big issues in our state is this commerce tax that raised this tax is $1.4 billion. Bad mistake. We got to get it repealed. The second is water. They're trying to take the water away. And, you know, water, remember what I'm trying to think of his name now, the author of Virginia City. Whiskeys for fighting, water's for drinking.
Okay.
So water's for drinking and whiskeys for fighting.
Okay.
One or the other.
Okay, I got it wrong.
I got it wrong. I'm sorry.
That's okay. It's been a busy week for it. Okay, so isn't it kind of ironic that some of us view politics as so sleazy that I think that it's actually, you know, on the moral scale, you're taking a step down going from brothel owner to politics?
Oh, you're exactly right. These politicians. The worst hooker I hired that I had to fire the first day is on the same level as these politicians. And they just take. They make decisions based on who will put money in their pocket.
Right.
They don't care about you and me. And you know what? Those days are over. And I'm going after them, just like Donald Trump's going after them.
So you see a lot of similarities between the pimping business and the politicking business?
Oh, absolutely. It's the same business. You take money to provide a service or give a vote, and I'm not going to do that. And that's why the public likes me. They can't buy me. They can't buy me. The establishment can't boss me because they can't buy me, and that's why the public loves me.
I just read another story just a couple days ago before I knew that you were getting into politics, that there's a big morality campaign in Nevada, and there's some people trying to outlaw prostitution in the couple of counties where it's legal, the ones in which you operate. What's going on there?
Well, it's the same thing. Isn't it ironic that only those two counties are going to fight this? It was my opponent that did all this. He got it all stirred up because the more that's out there in the public, the less votes I'm going to get. That's what they thought. But it turned around against them. They actually had closed down one of my places. State fire marshal came in and said, no, you're out of line here. They opened it back up, so I looked like a victim, and the public didn't like that. They don't like people, government agencies picking on people.
So who are you going up against in the general election now?
Well, there's a school teacher, a lady school teacher, a Democrat, but typically Democrats don't even run anything in that district because it's so far right and libertarian leaning right. And I'm not concerned about it.
Okay. Now, here's the other thing, because people have asked me, Dennis, if I would ever get into politics. And I've always said, absolutely not, because I can't imagine anything more boring. And you know, you and I have talked, you've been coming on my show for, I don't know, 15, 20 years.
Yep.
And
yep.
You like being the boss. You like being in charge. What you say goes. Now you're going to have to sit through all these meetings, and you're going to have to go to community events where people are going to scream at you all the time. Why in the world do you want to put yourself through this?
Well, the tax issue bothered me so much that these Republicans in name only voted for. And I was with Tucker Carlson in New York having dinner, and he says, Dennis, don't complain unless you want to do something about it. And so I did something about it.
But you think you're going to be able to handle that life? You're going to be able to sit through all those meetings and put yourself through all that grief?
Absolutely. I'll have to. I signed on for the job, and I'm going to be the best at it.
Okay. All right. So, and your nickname once again is, as a politician, what is it?
Roger Stone calls me the Trump of Pahrump.
The Trump of Pahrump is Dennis Hoff. He's run for Nevada state legislature. Dennis, it's always good talking with you. I appreciate you coming
Thank
on with
you.
Me this afternoon.
Always fun. Stay in touch, buddy.
All right. Dennis Hoff joining us. Your thoughts, you can text me 98973. That's 98973. But I really think it's the same business. And I think he is going to be surrounded. He was surrounded by the girls in the brothel who would do anything for money. And now he's going to be surrounded by the boys and girls in the legislature who are essentially the same way. So I don't have any problem with a pimp in politics. It seems quite apropos to me. Okay, yeah, text me your thoughts, 98973. And we have much more straight ahead here on the Dory Monson Show.
Now, shorty, she in the club, she dancing for dollars. She got a thing for that Gucci, that Fendi, that Prada, that BCBG, Burberry, Dolce and Gabbana. She feed them fools fantasies, they pay her cause they want her. I spit a little.
Well, the backlash is growing over a story I told you about a few days ago. Back in Connecticut, the way they treat high school athletes, it's the exact same as what we're doing now here in Washington. And that is, whatever gender you say you identify with, even if you're making no physical transformation, that is the gender sport in which you can compete. And so we are now seeing the ramifications of this, and I'm approaching this as not only the father of daughters, but as a longtime girls' high school varsity basketball coach. And as I said when I first presented the story a few days ago, other than family stuff, there's no greater joy I've ever experienced than winning a state championship. And the fact that, you know, these kids set a goal and achieve it, it is something you carry around for the rest of your life. Well, back in Connecticut, they had the state high school track and field championships. And two kids dominated in the girls' 100 and 200 meters. In fact, one of the kids set a new state record in both events. And both the first and second place finishers in those events are biological boys who are making, you know, no physical transformation. So they have the testosterone level of boys who are becoming men. And in every track and field event, the boys and men's times are faster than girls and women's times. In every timed event, in every event that is based on distance, the throwing events, the jumping events. And one of the kids says that this is when this person began to identify as a female. And by the way, in this interview, the kid has a mustache in the ninth grade and is competing in the girls' 100 and 200 meters.
I guess it all kind of started in about first grade or kindergarten. When I remember one year for Halloween, I wore Cinderella dress. I remember that.
And the dad is supportive of the kid competing as a girl.
You know, we're born into a body. We're born into a situation, but we grow into a person we're going to be. So someone says, why is your daughter running with the girls? They say, because she's my daughter, much like the reason your daughter's running with girls. And she's running exactly where she should be running.
Wrong. It's just flat out wrong. It's not fair. It's not fair to the third place finisher who would have been the state girls champion. It's not fair to competition. And so now the backlash is growing. Two parents of girls have started petition drives and are gathering hundreds of signatures that would ban transgender biological boys from competing in girls' sports. And it gets back to, if these kids want to live life as girls, none of our business. Let them, and God bless them. But there's no way they should be allowed to compete on the girls' track team. And the thing that really annoys me is in college athletics, you have to be physically transitioning to be a biological man competing in the women's sports, but not in high school. And a lot of people who are defending this say, well, it's just high school sports. Well, I'm telling you, there are a lot of high school athletes who have been diligent in working at their sport, and they play on select teams, and they play year-round, so that they can have a chance at being the best. And it is flat out not fair for girls to compete against biological boys. So, since I told you about this a few days ago, the petitions are circulating, hundreds of signatures. We'll keep you posted. The Big Lead at 2 is next.